In a world where everyone can be so judgmental, this podcast takes the time to analyze daily dilemmas and controversies and provide unbiased information and research to help you make sense of life's complicated issues. Dr. Nikki is a clinical neuropsychologist who integrates her knowledge of psychology, neuropsychology, and culture to process current events and cases in an empathic manner from various perspectives. If you are ready to become more open-minded, come be the critic on our couch.
Hello, I'm your host, Dr. Nikki, and welcome to the Critic's Couch. You know, we call this the Critic's Couch because I think it's very easy for individuals to criticize, if you will, what others do and events that take place without not actually taking the time, I should say, to kind of go over the statistics. And there's something that I definitely want to talk about today, and that is the significant amount of mass shootings that are taking place here in the United States. This is not normal, you guys. My children, who are all of school age, know very well what the drills are in case there is a certain code that is called and how they have to, you know, lock the doors, go underneath the tables. And I think of how disturbing that is for young children to have to go through this. And this is something that's happening all across the U.S. all the time. And unfortunately, us hearing about it is becoming way too common. On Saturday, May 14, 2022, an 18-year-old white male entered a supermarket in Buffalo, New York, and unfortunately, methodically and purposely killed 10 individuals, injuring 3 more, all of them black. He even had the audacity to live stream this. And apparently, as more information has come out, and he had left, I think, over 200 pages in terms of why he had done this, it seems that he referenced the very racist idea of replacement theory. If you're not familiar what replacement theory is, it was a theory that was conceived in the early 2010s by Renaud Camus, who's a French author, and he had written about the fear of a white genocide, arguing that immigrants who give birth to more children represent a threat to white people. Now, this is something that Peyton Gendron, who's the attacker, the Buffalo, New York supermarket, posted online. And it's the notion that white Americans are at risk of being replaced by people of color. This theory has also been reported on by other mass shooters and white supremacist group. Now, unfortunately, that does not explain at all the mass shooting that took place just days later in Uvalde, Texas, at Robb Elementary School, whereby a gunman entered the school and randomly and for no reason, as far as we know, killed 19 students and 2 teachers. We're talking about elementary school students. But guess what? The shootings have not stopped there. These are the 2 most popularized ones. Bottom line is that since the Uvalde shooting, since Memorial Weekends, there have been more shootings. 15 mass shootings have taken place across the United States since then. 15. Keep in mind that a mass shooting is described as one whereby 4 or more people are shot or killed, not including the shooter. The American Psychological Association, you know, recently released basically information in terms of their call for a gun reform. According to the president of the American Psychological Association, Frank C. Worrell, he reported a public health crisis requires a public health approach. He went on to say, "We cannot become numb to gun violence in our community. We call on Congress to pass legislation now to stem the spread of firearms, promote the safe usage and storage, and establish community-based teams that include police, mental health educators, and community advocates who can de-escalate situations with individuals who are at risk of using guns to commit violence or harm themselves." According to UBINET, which just came out in terms of looking at mass shootings, the U.S. accounts for 73% of all 139 incidents occurring in developed countries between 1998 and 2019. That's insane. So listen, whether you are a promoter of being able to own a weapon, the right to bear arms, or you're not, the bottom line is nobody is in favor of mass shootings. Absolutely nobody. So what can we do about this? So if we look a little bit in terms of what other developed countries have done, maybe we can get a little bit more of a guideline. In Australia, back in 1996, a young man killed 20 individuals with the first 29 shots from a semi-automatic rifle. At the end, 35 were dead and 18 were injured. Because of that, definitely some changes took place. And the newly elected Prime Minister John Howard was one of the country's most conservative leaders in the decades. It took only 12 days to broker nationwide bipartisan gun law reform across all 8 states and territories. Basically, what they decided to do, they prohibited semi-automatic long guns, while all gun owners were required to prove a genuine reason to possess a firearm, for example, whether it was for occupation or membership to a club or to compete. Self-defense remained an unacceptable reason, and owners were obliged to register every gun with the police. Australia also offered to buy back guns, and well over 1 million guns were turned over and destroyed. In the United Kingdom, in 1987, a man armed with a rapid-fire rifle killed 16 people, including an unarmed police officer and his own mother in England. There was a nationwide outcry, as you can imagine, and again, it was prompted to ban semi-automatic rifles and some shotguns. A decade later, in 1996, an individual killed 16 elementary school pupils and a teacher. Again, there was more pressure to do something more about gun violence, and the UK actually banned all handguns. In 1990, in New Zealand, in a small island settlement of Aramonia, a man armed again with a semi-automatic rifle killed 13 individuals, including 14 children and a police officer. Despite the public pressure to ban rapid-fire weapons, the country's well-established gun lobby prevented this from happening. There were 3 more mass shootings in 1992, 1994, and 1997, and again, there was pressure to ban guns, but with the country having more guns than people than either the UK or Australia, nothing really changed until March of 2019. An Australian visitor denied rapid-fire weapons in his own country was able, because of the lack of regulations, to obtain one in New England. He then fatally shot 51 people and injured 40 more in a mosque. Finally, at that time, Parliament voted 119-1 to ban these rifles and buy back rapid-fire weapons and high-capacity magazines. So why isn't the U.S., who unfortunately now has the horrible, horrible title of having the most mass shootings in developed country, why have we not pushed for stricter gun laws? Well, there are many individuals, especially in the Democratic Party, that would say that it has to do with the NRA, unfortunately, donating to the campaign of many of our senators. I'm looking at the Brady website, Brady United, and it basically lists the amount of money that many senators, unfortunately, have received from the NRA. I say unfortunately because, obviously, you know, when you have any company donating to a campaign, I think that it can lead to bias, whether it's the NRA, whether it's pharmaceutical companies, whoever it may be. So according to this website, Mitt Romney is probably the one that has received the most donations from the NRA. It says here that close to, this can't be right, $13 million. Richard Burr from North Carolina, $7 million. Roy Blunt from Missouri, $4.5 million. So if you go to the website, you can see the amount of money that senators have received from the NRA. As you can imagine, this obviously upsets many individuals because they feel that if this is the case, that quite possibly, you know, policies are not being changed, not to the benefit of the voters, but more so to the loyalty to for many companies. So this podcast obviously wants to present data from various different sources. According to the Salt Lake Tribune, they actually said that Mitt Romney did not receive any money from the NRA during his 2018 Senate campaign. So this is rather confusing. The Salt Lake Tribune states in 2012, Romney's presidential and related campaign funds, which received more than hundreds of millions of dollars in contributions, did receive $40,000 from the NRA in three separate deposits in two different funds. In July 27 of that year, the Romney for President Incorporated campaign, I guess, received two $5,000 donations from the NRA. And on the same day, Romney Victory Incorporated received $30,000 from the NRA. 6 years later, Romney's Senate campaign raised more than $4 million in contributions, which was partially financed with leftover money from his presidential campaign fund in the form of 1 million deposits on February 5th and 200,000 deposits on July 24th. So therefore, the more than $13 million that Romney allegedly received from the NRA, and the likely reason why Brady reports that he received such a massive amount of money from the gun lobbies is related to the money the NRA spent on trying to defeat Barack Obama during the president's 2012 re-election campaign. Something to kind of keep in mind, unfortunately. So obviously for the individuals who lived through this experience and the parents, I'm sure most of us clearly understand the PTSD that they could be experiencing. But what about the rest of us Americans that are actually, dare I say, sitting back and watching all of this occur? You know, seeing all this news for many individuals, including myself initially, is just really quite upsetting. One study published in 2014 found that the more coverage people saw of the Boston Marathon bombing, the more symptoms of intrusive thoughts about the event and avoiding the reminders of it, the more these people experienced it. Dana Ross Garfin, who's an adjunct professor of nursing and public health at UC Irvine, is the co-author of the study and basically said that many of the individuals who actually consistently kept seeing these things on the news exhibited more symptoms. Listen to this, more symptoms than those who were actually present at the Boston bombing. Meaning, for those of us who are saying, well, oh, fortunately, you know, that didn't happen in our city or didn't happen in our children, it's happening and you are witnessing and aware of it. And unfortunately, this can and does indeed impact us. Garfin and her research partners have also studied the effects of reading and watching coverage of several tragic news events over time and found that on average, the stress symptoms are more likely to occur after multiple events. Unfortunately, some people may get desensitized to the stream of bad news, but the general trend, according to Allison Holman and Garfin's co-author and UC Irvine colleague, is of sensitization rather than habituation. Okay? It does not help, bottom line, that the news of these shootings are also in the backdrop of the pandemic, the Ukraine and war, and so many other crises that are currently going on. The other factor that is quite frustrating to many Americans is that no one seems to be able to do anything to prevent more of them from happening in the United States. Now, Dan McAdams, a psychology professor at Northwestern University, mentions in this article on The Atlantic that there can be what's known as a learned helplessness, right? The psychological term for when people come to believe that their actions don't matter because they feel that the outcome they face are chaotic and inescapable, that they're not going to be able to do anything about it. There's also a feeling of reduced sense of belonging in the American society. Now, one label for this group of negative emotions is known as headline stress disorder. And this was coined by Stephen Stosny, who's a retired clinical psychologist in Maryland. Now, this is not an official diagnosis, But Dr. Stosny pointed out to the fact that he found the concept useful in describing the pattern that he noticed in some of his clients during the election, when people were stressed out by the political news. Stosny has pointed out that this has prompted a feeling of powerlessness, and it can manifest itself in irritability with those who are closest to us. Yet at the same time, the relentlessness of the news can lead to compassion fatigue. And this is where a person's emotions basically just, it gets drained. So as Stosny points out, that people in this state of struggle to feel sufficient compassion, even when they know it is warranted, and they may feel guilty as a result. Now, most individuals would tell you, most psychologists would say, you know what, if you're feeling overwhelmed, stop looking at the news, okay? But if you can bear the negative emotion, it would be wise to listen to them, as unpleasant as it may be. Sometimes, and according to this particular author, Garfin, sometimes with mental health, it's like we want no anxiety and no stress. But some sort of elevated psychological response can be adaptive and potentially inspire change, according to Stosny. So Stosny suggests that one way to combat these feelings of powerlessness is to channel your reaction toward efforts to reduce the gun violence, such as donating to an advocacy group or joining a rally. According to another psychologist, you know, dealing with this gun violence is not a matter of learning how to cope. It's a matter of engaging. And I thought this was pretty powerful. According to this particular author, McAdams mentions, "For me, this is the price we all pay to live in this kind of society," he said. "I'm not going to tune out all these things so that I can try to salvage some peace and happiness. I feel that it's kind of my responsibility at this point to feel terrible." And unfortunately, I have to agree. I think we're at a point where we do have to feel terrible for the numerous losses that are taking place in this country. And again, there could be hopefully a common ground where we can still believe in and stand by the constitutional rights of bearing arms, but with regulations. And it's not enough just to background checks. I'm always kind of surprised that in this country, we have to jump through so many hoops for so many things, whether it's driving a car, whether it's getting a license to practice, but yet there is no background checks, no issues related to mental health or numerous factors when it comes to gun control. So again, take this time, this challenge, if you will, to really look into the importance of gun control. And if you're someone that's interested, it's more focused on the right to bear arms, I think it's important as well for you to be aware and educated as to what gun control is. I don't think it's necessarily what most people want, to take away all the guns. I think that what most people are pushing for is to have stricter gun laws and more provisions, if you will, in terms of preventing these mass shootings. Again, this is Dr. Nikki, your host for The Critic's Couch. Have a blessed day.